Welcome to Kayak Fishing Radio. It's the Tuesday edition, the Double L Show. The show's so busy we have to have two hosts just to handle everything going on. And I am one half of those hosts, Mark Lozier, joined by my wife, Chris. You there with us, Chris?
I'm here.
I didn't know if you were helping Juan out still, or if he's got that fixed yet or not, or getting our guests all logged in.
I'm not seeing anything.
Well, he's still on the phone too. We got him in there, so
no,
we'll
I'm
get that
sorry.
Worked out.
He just got kicked off.
Oh, well, he's there. We'll get him back. We got a few minutes anyway, so he's having a little technical difficulty with our guest's phone line, so we're trying to get him through on the Skype. Anyway, welcome everybody.
I'm going to go in the bubble. You do your thing.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Everybody's still piling in the chat room. Get a seat, get comfortable, pop a top, whatever you need to do. Relax, unwind, cool off if you're in the hot part of the country. I don't know anybody in our neck of the woods today. It crossed over to triple digits again with the heat index. I spent the whole day outside staining the deck for a customer, and it was pretty bad when you could watch your sweat drip right back down to the stain. I had to keep rebrushing it. But anyway, it was a hot one. Hot one today, hot one tomorrow, but then it's going to drop around here back in the 80s for the weekend, which sounds great. Looking forward to that. Yeah. Get out there on the water and not cook and fry. So, like I said, everybody's still piling in the chat room, so we'll just kind of take it slow and easy for a minute, get everybody adjusted. Hope you're not having problems logging in. Looks like we got a lot of people who have logged in and not a lot of guests. So, I mean, that's a good sign. People are working this thing out. One thing I have never tried before, but I did learn tonight from our guest who's going to be joining us in a little bit. He says he has better luck with his Twitter account as far as logins go. So if you have a Twitter account and are having trouble with your Facebook or however else you log in, try your Twitter. Juan says that's what he's been using. He used to have trouble with his Facebook, but doing better with the Twitter. So apologize for anybody who is having trouble, but by the looks of things, we only have a few guests. Guests, you're welcome to log in with your Twitter account or Facebook account, and then you can join the chat room. So by now, you can just read what's going on. But once you're logged in, you can go ahead and chime in with the rest of the gang in the chat room, which if you've never attended one of our shows especially, you know that chat room can get a little crazy. So you can join all the whatnots that go on in there. Plus, you can ask questions of the guests tonight, but you can always call in. Anyone, feel free to call in. The phone number is 714-816-4727. So if you got any questions for the guests tonight, if you got anything you'd like to share with us, anything like that, please call in. You got any upcoming events, anything going on in your neck of the woods, we always like to have that on the show because our neck of the woods, I guess, is everywhere is with this radio show because it's on the internet. So it's not just Tidewater that we're talking about here all the time. So definitely, if you got something you'd like to share, please let us know. Put up the links. Yep, there you go. Yak Chum, very good. Matt's putting up a link here for the upcoming Fluke tournament, Flounder Fluke. Anyway, from July 20th to 21st, and he put up the link on the chat room there. All that benefits the Heroes on the Water New Jersey chapter has sponsoring this event. So y'all go check that out. Matt called in a couple weeks ago and gave us all the lowdown on that tournament that they're going to have up there. It's a catch, float, and release, and sound like they're going to have enough prizes and food and everything to go along to make it a great event. And like I said already, it's all benefits Heroes on the Water. So not a better reason to go than that right there to do the how part of the tournament. Chris, you with us again? I don't know where she's at. All right, very good. So she'll
be
back.
I'm sorry, I'm here. I'm on mute. I'm talking to you and I didn't realize I was on mute. Of course,
I couldn't hear you.
Some of the men prefer their women on mute, but you know.
All right, I'm not going.
That wasn't funny? I thought it was funny. I made a ha-ha.
I'm not going to laugh. I wouldn't be smart on my part at all.
Good man.
We could only wish. See, I knew the chat room was going to jump on it, but I'm going to just sit back and do my radio show and be a good boy. Now, I was just talking about the New Jersey tournament and benefiting Howe, and which made me think about this past weekend. We had a Howe Tidewater chapter event, and for myself, and I know Chris feels the same way, it was a proud parent day nonetheless for us. Anybody who does or does follow us on Facebook, either our personal accounts or First Landing, we put up several pictures, and a couple of those pictures were of our little termite, Amara, who caught an 18-inch flounder out of the kayak. It was probably our second or third kayak fishing trip, but it was pretty awesome to see. Biggest fish of the day caught by the 11-year-old, and we all had a great time out there until the rain came. Thunder and lightning storm ran us off the water, but it ran us off right at the lunch bell rang, so it wasn't too bad, but it was a good day, good event.
But you also have to say, you know, the dinner was also pretty amazing for those people that know us.
Yeah, we had first fish that we've kept and caught in a long time, probably almost forever it seems like. But we had a nice flounder dinner to round up the day, round off the day, compliments of Amara, so that was very cool. Tom just put up a link to the Tidewater Howe chapter. I'm sure that's the pictures that were posted up on that event that day. We had a great day. Any day we do a Howe event's a great day. But like I said, for Chris and I, it was even more special not only doing the Howe thing, but to see Amara catch that flounder and just have a good time out there in the water. We had a busy weekend this weekend, didn't we, Chris? We did a lot of fishing. It's been a while since we've done that much fishing in a row.
Yeah. Actually, it has.
Kind of sad to say, but yeah, we've been busy with life. But we got out Friday evening. Friends of ours came from North Carolina. We joined them to fish Friday evening. The Howe event I just spoke about. And then I had a charter on Sunday, and Chris tagged along and fished with us and had a good day with two people on the trip that we took. So it was a very busy weekend, but a lot of fun, a lot of good time on the water. So any time on the water is always good time. So
very, very, very good time.
Okay.
Very.
All right.
Very
well, let's get going
fun.
Here so we can. How's our guest working out there, Chris? Are you
How
getting him taken
see?
Care?
I was having a really good time and you cut me off.
Yeah, I know where you're going. I'm trying to cut you off on purpose that time.
Oh, okay. Our guest is on live with us. Worked out fine.
Okay,
I'm
good.
On Skype, so we're good to go. Juan, just
all right.
Hey, Mark,
got
can you hear me?
Yeah, you're good, Juan. All right, I just want to make sure you're
great.
Here. I'm going to
give
the rest
our
of my spiel.
Maybe you
sure.
should give all of our listeners a little teaser.
Who's our listeners? What are you talking
about? I'm talking to Juan.
Oh, excuse the hell out of me.
I just want to hear you play the boondoggle thing.
That's
why I'm here.
Okay, here we go. Boondoggle.
Boondoggle. What the heck is a boondoggle? It's a bunch of crazy kayakers getting together in Virginia Beach October 5th through 8th. For more information, check out yakangler.com, the ultimate resource for kayak fishermen.
How's that?
There you go.
That's awesome.
That's
every time
compliment.
I hear that, it's awesome.
That's compliments of Steve Chapman. And I see Mike Ortega's in the chat room. Mike, I guess you're listening to me, I hope. I need you to do me a favor because I see Steve is not here. Maybe you can steal us the sound clip of where Steve was saying he wants to – what did he say about the bonefish? Mike oh, man. It was funny as heck. I was listening to the podcast of their Abacos trip, and – Steve made a comment about he wants to tangle with some bones or something like that, and they got a sound clip of it they've been using on the show. So we need to get that sound clip from you, Mike Ortega, so we can slide it in here when Steve's in the room. We'll hit the button on him sometime. It's pretty funny anyway. Hopefully Mike's listening and he can get up with me after the show. But anyway, yeah, well, Chris hit the button, so we'll talk about it. The Boondoggle, October 5th through the 8th. I'm sure if you've tuned in before, you've heard us talk about it, but I know we have a few new listeners probably tonight, some guests who have chimed in tonight just to hear Juan speak later. But it's an open event, no entry fee. There's no other reason to come than just to get out on the water and fish. It's here in Virginia Beach, Tidewater area. Like I mentioned, October 5th through the 8th. That's Columbus Day weekend. We're kind of calling First Landing State Park as the headquarters, just because that's kind of centrally located for all the fishing in this area. We were talking last night during Chuck's show. There's still some campsites available. People are starting to book the campsites now. The cabins are all booked up. So if you're looking to get a cabin, sorry, they're all gone. And there's Redfish Chuck now, who I know has a cabin. But anyway, there's plenty of accommodations here in Virginia Beach. We got just as many hotels and motels as we do anything else down here. So we'll definitely find you a place to stay. We got a backyard you can put a tent in. We don't care. We just want everybody to come. Looking for a good turnout. There's, like I said, no entry fee. It's just a bunch of kayak anglers getting together and fishing. We've got everything you want to do here. We got freshwater, saltwater. The fall is always probably one of our best times, and that's when, you know, October there is when the fish really start chewing and start getting ready for the winter migration out of here. So hope to see a lot of you join us. If you have any questions, anything we can help you with, feel free to contact either of us. You can get more information on yakangler.com/boondoggle, kayakfishingradio.com/boondoggle. We're throwing in a couple things. I know Chip had mentioned we're going to try to have a Snoopy rod tournament. And I have a little small entry fee for that, but the it'll be a 50-50 kind of thing. So 50 of it will go back to the winner, and the other 50 is going to go to Hal. But like I said, it's a Snoopy tournament. So either some of those little Snoopy, Barbie, Spider-Man rods. What else did we talk about using? Oh, those little tiny ice fishing rods. Yeah, Barbie, ice fishing rods.
Those little travel rods, those little teeny tiny ones.
Yeah, that's. I'm trying to think of, Chip, you're in there. What's that Ronco packing whatever mini rod? Yeah, mini rod tourney.
Mini rod tourney. Also, you know, this would be a really good point to say at this point, we've got a couple of cool raffle prizes. Rob Choi has graciously donated one of his fish rods. If anybody else would like to donate or sponsor in any shape or form, we Gator Dave, I'm not sure but he is doing shirts for every youth that is coming to the boondoggle. What else do we have at this point, Mark?
I don't know. We have some more tackle and things. I don't think it's every youth. I don't want to miss. I think he's doing X number of shirts he's donating. So we'll have to figure out how that works out. He's donating them out of his own pocket. So we're going to have to see how that works. I don't know how many shirts Dave is doing for us, but I know he is.
But we've got a variety of people on board. Kayak Kevin, Rob Choi, Chad Hoover. So everything's going to be available, fresh and saltwater fishing.
Yeah, we got definitely enough for you to do here, and then we're going to also time that in with a Hal event, I think, with Tom Vanderheiden and the Tidewater chapter on Sunday maybe, and Rudy, or one of the days on the thing. So we'll have plenty for everybody to do, plenty to keep you busy. So, yeah, go check out the Boondoggle, get all your info. If you got any questions, anything we can help you with, get you set up to come on up, please let us know. We'd be glad to help you.
That's right. And Luther also is on board for donating and sponsoring the boondoggle. Luther,
that's right. Yes,
kayak. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep,
so,
yep.
We're looking good. We're looking good. So, like I said, mark your calendars. And the week prior to that, the other big local event in our area, which has become a really large local event, is the Tidewater Kayak Anglers Association's charity tournament, which also benefits Heroes on the Water. And besides for Heroes on the Water, we also give a portion of that to Project Healing Waters. Last year we had over 240 kayak anglers participate in that event, and I can't imagine we'd have any less than that this year. Probably going to have more, but go check out tkaa.org for all the information on that. Maybe you can attend both or hang around for the whole week and fish the tournament and stick it out and fish with us during the week and be ready for the boondoggle. But a TKA event is another one that's definitely worth coming here for. This is our 8th year now of doing this event. I fished the very first one, and there was 43 of us, I believe. So in 7 years, we've grown to 200-plus more anglers in that event. That's just to show the leaps and bounds of kayak fishing in general. We've had people come for that from as far away as Texas and Michigan, New Hampshire, Maine, all over the country. So definitely check out both of those events, and hopefully you can attend both or one of them or something, but we'd love to see you here. So enough about that upcoming events. I don't think we have anything else major going on upcoming locally. No, I don't know of anything anyway. Nobody sent me in any other local events. Fishing reports. I have my usual weekly fishing report from North Carolina from Mr. Philip Ruckard. Yak for Fish from the Get Outdoors store down in Greensboro, North Carolina. Philip's been doing a great job on keeping us up to date on what's going on to our south in North Carolina. Still seems like the bite's pretty much the same as it has been. Flounder, drum, and specks in the upper Neuse area. What else has he got here for us? Striper are still hanging around the New Bern area with the best bite being early in the morning. And he says they're falling for topwater lures at that time. So that's good to still see him. But he says don't forget that striper season is closed. So it'll be catch, photo, and release. And this time of year, it's really not great to do a lot with the stripers. They don't recover well in the heat when the water temperature gets up there. So if you are catching them, make sure when you put them back in, because season is closed, but make sure that they've recovered well before you let them go and you see them swim off good. They get that lactic acid built up, and like I said, they're basically a cold kind of water-natured fish, so when this water temperature gets climbing like it is now with the heat we've been having, they don't recover too well. So handle them carefully, put them back in, make sure you see them swim off. What else has Philip got going on there? Tarpon have been sighted all the way up to New Bern. Wow. Kayakers can launch from Lawson Creek Landing and be under the high bridge within a half an hour. Well, there you go, guys. If you're down in North Carolina, Philip's pretty much telling you where you need to go to catch a tarpon. He says here you'll need at least 40 foot of anchor line to hold if you're bottom fishing. Sight casting will be hit or miss. Well, it seems like the New Bern area, if you're down that way, or go check out this Lawson Creek Landing launch. Maybe you can luck into a tarpon. The big drum bite continues and will get better in the next month, he also says. What else has he got going on? Then on to the freshwater side, water temps continue to rise, and bass are going deep. Crankbaits diving 14 to 16 feet are producing well. All French to me. I don't know what he's talking about. No, I know what a crankbait is, but anyway. And then an upcoming event that they do have down there at the Get Outdoors store in Greensboro is conducting a basic safety course at Hagenstone Park. He said you can call the shop to verify availability as it's limited to 10 people. Well, better get your name in the hat then if you want to take in that class that they're going to be given on basic safety. So once again, thank you to Philip Ruckard from Get Outdoors for providing us with our North Carolina report. So we'll move on to our local report. Locally, we've
We don't have nothing locally. Absolutely nothing is biting.
Yeah. Anyway, we've pretty much got all of our summer species here now. Great spades and sheephead I've seen come in from the bridge. A couple of our guys in the chat room went out this past weekend. I saw they did well on sheephead, spadefish, inshore, flounder bite, speckled trout bite, all remaining pretty good. Croaker, I haven't seen a lot of great croaker reports, but then again, Tommy V hasn't been going, I don't think. Cobia are still around, black drum, and the big red drum, I think they're still doing pretty well over there. I haven't heard much from those, but like I mentioned last week, once the man in the brown suit shows up, a lot of people kind of get away from the big reds and big black drum and stick to the cobia for a while, basically because cobia are pretty good eating. Yes, Andy, and Spanish. Andy put up Spanish. Spanish mackerel right off the beach, doing well. Spanish croaker. I don't know nothing about a Spanish croaker, Tom.
He just made that up.
Yeah, that's his winter. What was his winter croaker he had? The white, snowy white croaker or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. He's got a croaker for every season and probably in every language, too.
Yeah. Very cool. You think?
Spotted Spanish Lycobia. Very funny, guys. As far as I'm concerned, as far as I'm telling, nothing is biting. And that is my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right, Chris, keep it up. You're going to tell on yourself. Chris had a good day Sunday, and she's trying to be quiet about it, if you guys can tell, but she's not doing a very good job. So,
see, now you're feeding more into it than I did. Oh, look, Tommy V, you ate flounder, and it was very, very good, Tom. The flounder was awesome. You know, not that I'm one big for storytelling. We didn't think we had enough on the four fillets, so I went to the grocery store and bought a couple of more fillets. Let me tell you, huge difference, huge difference. Anyway, okay,
yeah.
On, honey, I'm sorry.
Well, that's all you're going to say?
Yeah,
it was a big difference. If you looked at Chris's Facebook picture, the store-bought flounder as opposed to that wild-caught flounder, it's definitely a big difference in the size, shape, and texture and everything of the fish. But then again, we as recreational anglers aren't allowed to keep 13-inch flounder, so it's probably why it looks a lot different when they're a little bigger. But that's all I really got locally. Like I said, everything's going strong out here. The heat and the weather and the pop-up storms. Y'all be careful out there. We ran into that Saturday. It wasn't as hot and humid as it has been, but we got caught out there with the halibut on Saturday. We had some lingering clouds, but nothing looked bad. And then just like always here in Tidewater and pretty much anywhere on the East Coast this time of year, it just came out of nowhere. So keep your eye in the sky. If you got a smartphone that's got some good apps on it, periodically check that. But before you knew it, it was raining sheets coming across the Rudy Inlet, and then not long after that, thunder, lightning. We went 10 miles up the street to do, and there wasn't a drop of rain on the street. So this goes to show, it just depends on where you are at what time of the day, but it can happen to you. So don't get caught out there in the wrong place at the wrong time in one of those storms. If I'm sure Justin Curtis Mayor could tell us all about that, but anyway, yeah, keep your eye out there. The weather can turn bad real quick. So, well, I'm not going to mess around with all this blabber and talk about the local stuff anymore. We're going to get to our guest, so we make sure we give him plenty of time, seeing he took his Tuesday night out to join us. A couple of weeks ago, Chris and I had done a show. We called it the Friends and Family Appreciation Night, and we asked a lot of our listeners, we asked all of you, who you'd like to hear from, and there was a couple names that kept getting repeated. One of them was last week's guest, Jeff Little, and the other name that came up a lot was tonight's guest, Juan. Juan does the same style, I guess you could say, as last week's guest, so we've got a two weeks now in a row. We're doing the kayak bass river fishing guy story here, and Juan and I were talking tonight just before the show, and I said, you know, we don't do a lot of freshwater, Chris and I, so when it comes to this topic, it's nice to have somebody on here that can just do his thing. I can't really interject or help out or question much because we don't do it, but I think if I was to try to do some freshwater kayak fishing, I think that river thing would be pretty cool to me with the moving water and all the obstacles, and a lot different than sitting on a still lake. But it's been pretty interesting. I keep up with Juan. We're fellow, along with Chris, all three of us are members of the Hook One crew, so I see a lot of what Juan's doing on there, and, of course, the old Facebook and everything like that. And Juan took a trip this year that we're going to talk about. He's got a lot of interesting things. He puts on a class up in Pennsylvania, a fishing camp, and he's a guide. So without much more talking about Juan, we're going to let Juan talk about Juan. So, Juan, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here, Mark. I'm definitely here.
All right, we got all that phone stuff straightened out, did we?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You guys can hear me loud and clear now, right?
Yeah, you're good to go.
Awesome. So, good hopefully, I'll be able to answer some questions tonight, too. So, if the guys in the chat room have questions, you know, go ahead and fire them out there. Was there anything that we talked about, maybe talking a little bit about my Texas trip for a little bit? I don't know. You want to start there?
Yeah, let's go with the Texas, because that was very interesting. Yeah. Like I said, I don't do any bass fishing or anything like that, but keeping up with all those pictures and the videos and everything you put on. And actually, I don't know if you remember. I'm sure you do. You called in right before you left for that trip. You talked to us, and I think it was just days before you guys were leaving. So it was pretty cool. So, yeah, give us a rundown on your trip to Texas and what all took place there.
It was a phenomenal trip. You know, it was about a year in planning. It's really hard. It's a, you know, the Devil's River is a remote river in southwest Texas, really close to the Mexican border, probably at its closest point. It's about 25 miles from the border. And we did a 24-mile float. A lot of the information that we got, we just kind of pieced together from, you know, Google Maps, trying to talk to people. It's really so remote that you know, it's just hard to gather intel on what you're going to be dealing with when you get there. So that was really the toughest part. And then, of course, one major obstacle was, you know, getting all our gear from Pennsylvania and Virginia, where most of the guys were from that were going on this trip. The trip was actually hatched, funny enough, at my kayak fishing boot camp a year prior to leaving. Last year in June, some of the guys who attended my boot camp, and I'd fished with them a number of times in the past, and I'd guided them a number of times in the past, so I knew who they were. I fished with them, and I was comfortable with those guys. We just kind of saw the video of one of the fellows that did the run, and we said, hey, let's do that next year. And so we just kind of made that commitment to really, you know, doing the trip. So we spent about a year of researching and planning. You're going to a really special place when the day before you leave to hit the river. We stayed at a ranch overnight the night before we got carted out to the river, which was quite a trip in itself. It's out across the, you know, desert dirt road kind of thing. But the film crew from Animal Planet went down the day before we left. I know you're going into a special place. Yeah, it's really, you know, we heard the story of folks who had gone and they ran out of water 2 days. You know, the outfitter that took us into the river, you know, told us a few stories along the way. You know, people that ran out of water with 2 days to go, you know, because they didn't have any filtration pumps to pump the river water, which is really, really pristine water. We carted water and we pumped water as well. While we were there, because obviously you're in the middle of the desert, so, you know, it's 90 degrees or better during the day. There was the one story I thought was interesting is a group of three, I guess, got put up on a rock someplace and literally left people out on the rock in the middle of the river overnight. And one of the party actually was able to hike their way somehow to a place where they could get help, which I found amazing because it's really in the middle of nowhere. They must have been close to the beginning or the end of the trip to be able to do that. So we were on the river. We didn't see another person in 4 days. The fishing was phenomenal. A lot of 3 and 4 pound fish. Our biggest smallmouth were around 18 inches or so. We didn't crack 20 on smallmouth. The biggest largemouth we caught, and this is, you know, in a river, a small river, it was 23 inches, and it was, I think it was close to around, it was around 7 pounds. So we caught some really, really good fish, had a lot of fun. We probably caught, I'm guessing, like 200 fish in the 4 days we were on the river. So we had plenty of action, but really the scenery was phenomenal.
How did you come up with that? I mean, this... I'm not in the bass loop, but I mean, why that river? Why that look? I mean, what was the? Is that like a mecca for you guys for bass fishing? Is that some? Obviously, Sean Russell, who's in the chat room, is just going to say, "Duh, Mark, it's in Texas. Why would you not go?" But
exactly.
So it's just a big. It's on everybody's bucket list.
Yeah, it's on a lot of guys' bucket list, and really I think a lot of that was sparked by some videos that were done on YouTube. The water is crystal clear. You know, you can see down as deep as the water is. The river and the rock formations and the scenery is incredible. Now, it's a really rugged area. It's not an easy trip. But it's, I mean, at one point, I think we probably, you know, dragged our kayaks through low water and rock, you know, at least 2 miles the one day. So it's not a trip for the faint at heart, but it's definitely an adventure. There's great fishing, and there's a lot to see. I mean, honestly, I would love to just paddle that river and have time to spend to take pictures and hang out in the different spots, because there's just so many things that you can see, you know, at that river. One of these things is called armadillo running. Armadillos don't run that fast, though. I found out how actually slow they really are. They're pretty slow. So if you're ever attacked by an armadillo, you can definitely get away pretty quickly. And remember,
don't eat them. They got leprosy.
Yeah, I don't even know if I want to touch them. They're kind of ugly, man. I don't know.
Yeah,
like
I ran into them down in Florida.
My goal when I went to Texas was to see a wild boar and to see an armadillo. Saw a roadkill wild boar, so we crossed that one off the list, kind of. And then we did see an armadillo, so that was pretty fun. But the river is phenomenal. You know, it's got some rapids on it. It's got a little bit of everything. It's a plunge drop river, meaning it pulls up really nice, almost to a standstill at times. And in those areas, you really catch, you know, a lot of the largemouth and smallmouth. And then it drops, and it'll go through a rapid section, and you know, and then you'll hit another pool that you can fish. There's some waterfalls there. I mean, there's just so much to see. It was just an incredible, phenomenal trip. I've got a lot of pictures from the trip on my Facebook page. I'm going to put up a link to my website right now. I put it up. And I did pass through a link to the videos. I don't know if guys clicked on it or not. But we did do a video of the trip that showed some of the fish that we caught and some of the scenery. I pushed that through a couple minutes ago. But if the guys want to look up on the list on the chat room there, they can find it. But if you go to my Kayakfish PA website, you go over to my Facebook page. There's a link from my website. You can look at my Facebook page, and I've got tons of pictures out there from the trip, and it was phenomenal. I mean, it was something that's kind of a bucket list trip, and it would be something that I would do it again. In a second. It was challenging. We had 30 mile an hour winds the one day, and you know what? It didn't rain for 18 months before we got there, and guess what? It dropped to 70 degrees the second day we were there. It rained on and off for the rest of the day, and there were torrential downpours. We even had golf ball size hail the last morning. All that, we have pictures of it, on my Facebook page. Literally, the hail was so, the impact, you know, of golf ball size hail can literally dent up like one of those water bottles that you use that are metal water bottles. It had divots all over it. It was laying out on the rock. After the hailstorm went by, we all came out of our tents and out from underneath the brush piles that we hid under and looked to see that this metal bottle had all kinds of divots. And I even have a picture of my hard bait box, which got like about 4 or 5 holes blasted in it. And there was actually big, you know, golf ball size hail inside my tackle box that broke the holes through it.
You got to bring a helmet when you plan that trip next time.
It rained. The one day it rained so hard that the river rise so fast. I dragged my kayak up on a rock. I just sat down a rapid, and I dragged my kayak up on a rock that was probably a foot above the water. And in the 5 minutes it took the other guys to get down through the rapid, the water was up over that rock already. So that's how fast that water runs off in the desert. I mean, it can be dangerous. But again, it was a lot of fun. We prepared for a year for it. We were prepared for any scenario. And, we really had a great time. I mean, one of the guys is a professional EMT firefighter that was with us. So we had all our ducks lined up. So
yeah, you got to for a trip like that. So you got dropped off. So you got dropped off, obviously. And then you had to arrange to be picked up at such and such. How do you plan that part of it? You just kind of how'd you figure all that out? Like, we're going to leave here today.
Yeah, there's only one outfitter on the river, and there's only one float you can do. So they take you, drop you off, and pick you up, and that's pretty much the extent of it. And the rest of it, you have to figure out.
Gotcha.
And that's the hard part. We did 4 days, 3 nights and 4 days.
Very cool. How far did you cover in that amount of days?
24 miles. Yeah, right. That's pushing it. That's pushing it when you're trying to fish, yeah. We were pushing it pretty hard, but it still left us time. But we did have to paddle through some pretty nice-looking water, though. That was for sure. But it was a great trip.
So we saw armadillos. We saw dead hogs. We got hailstorms. You haven't mentioned the fish, though. So what were the fish like? How was the fish?
I will tell you that, and Sean's going to love this, I have never had a largemouth bass pull as hard as we did in that river. I don't know what it is about those fish, but they fought harder than, you know, largemouth versus smallmouth, the smallmouth really tend to fight like little tanks. But on that river, for whatever reason, the fish really fought hard. They had a lot of fun in them, and it was a lot of fun to go out there and catch fish. We caught, around 20 fish apiece each day or so. And a lot of those were, three and four pounders. So it made for a great trip. I mean, the average size was really nice. So it was a lot of fun. We did, experience a cold front for Texas at least. And so that definitely actually played into our hands a little bit, because we're so used to dealing with cold front conditions here, in the Northeast that we just adjusted to that pretty much right away. And so we didn't miss a beat in terms of our fishing.
That was going to be my next question, and because this is all pretty interesting to me, as I said at the top of the show.
Yeah.
How does so you fish in Pennsylvania, on the rivers in Pennsylvania. How does your fishing style, did it change? Is it a lot the same? What was it like going from Pennsylvania River to a river on the border of Texas and Mexico? How did that play into all the trip? Is it a lot similar? Was it totally different? Was there a big learning curve, I guess?
What we did is we did a lot of research on the river and try to dig as much information as we could from like their DCNR site. We actually had data on the fish and what they eat when they do like belly content surveys. So we had that from the river. So we took that belly content surveys and kind of picked our lineup of baits, because you're limited. I mean, you're talking about kayaks camping for 4 days. And I camped out of my ride 115, and it was perfect for those 4 days. I had no trouble hauling the water and the food and the everything that I needed in that kayak and my fishing gear. But you did have to compact your fishing gear. So we, it was basically the same forage base, bugs, minnow type baits, and crayfish. The number one bait there, honestly, was a predator craw in the same color that's my number one bait on the Juniata River in Pennsylvania. So we really didn't change our approach. As a matter of fact, a couple of the guys who fished the river pretty regularly were surprised that our second best bait, and the bait that produced probably the biggest largemouth, was a spinner bait, which they, I guess, typically don't throw on that particular river for whatever reason. So we kind of broke out of the mold a little bit there, and we downsized our baits too. We were using a 3.25 predator craw that Winko's makes, and that was the bait that worked. And we were told going into it that we should fish really big baits. Now, maybe we would, and we had big baits with us, maybe we would have done it had there not been that 10 to 15, 20 degree drop in temperature, but it worked out for us.
All right, I'm going to stop you for a second because we've got a few questions. I know you can see
sure.
the chat room, so.
Sure.
Juan, let's see. Sean Russell wanted to know, what type of bass forage did you find there, Juan?
I'm not an expert on the forage in those rivers, but it looked, I look at two different body shapes in terms of forage. If I don't know what they are, it's the minnow shape, the longer, slender shape, and it's like the shad shape, the wider body. We saw a lot of slender minnow shape forage, and a lot of stuff that was like 3 and 4 inches long. And crawfish, they were, nothing big. I mean, basically the same thing we see in the Juniata and the Susquehanna River. So when we did the forage assessment, like on site, we already had the data from the websites that we looked at, but then we went on site, it pretty much kind of confirmed what we were thinking about.
Gotcha. Someone else asked, they wanted to know, on a 4-day trip, did you pack food or eat what you caught along the way?
We packed.
You better pack something, huh? Don't be too cocky.
What I like to do is actually use backpacking food when I'm doing something like this on a kayak. And I know during my kayak fishing boot camps, part of the boot camp is one day of seminars, and then we do days on the river overnight. And what I do is have the guys pack backpacking food that's dried. You boil water, you add it to it. I like that because you don't spend a lot of time preparing meals on the river, because a lot of times I'm there to fish, you know what I mean? And so I can, you know, get out my stove, fire it up in a couple minutes, get some water boiling, throw it in the bag of, you know, food and reconstitute it, heat it up, and it's good to go. And then you can go about your business. And it gives you a lot of the calories that you need when you're out there paddling, you know, all day long and fishing hard all day long. So that's what I typically do. I don't do a whole lot of, like, carrying regular food with me. It's mostly dried stuff. And it packs down really small. So you can extend your trips that way, you know what I mean? You can, you know, right. Because you don't have to carry big bulky food. You don't have to worry about ice or, you know, cooling things. So it makes everything a lot easier, and you can focus on your fishing more.
All right. Somebody wanted to know what color predator craw. I don't know what the heck a predator craw is.
Okay. Yeah, mud pie is the color. Mud pie. I'll give that one up.
Mud pie.
That's all right. I got no secrets, man.
Brown
mud
pumpkin
pie.
Craws down there. Well, somebody said brown pumpkin craws.
Yeah,
sure that.
Exactly. Your browns, you know, and I look at hues and colors when I'm looking at bait fish, you know, whether it be on the Juniata, Susquehanna, or out on the Devil's River in Texas. And, you know, I'm looking at, you know, the browns and the greens. You know, you just try to get in the ballpark is what I try to do with my bait colors. And, again, we're talking really clear water, so you're trying to match the forage color as best you can in those circumstances.
Match the hatch.
Yep, match the hatch, exactly. Match the size, match the color as best that you can.
Sounds like Sean's probably trying to plan a trip soon, because Sean had another question. I'm just joking with you, Sean. But he said, did you have any problems finding places to set up the camp?
We didn't, because we did a lot of planning ahead of time, and we kind of knew what we were going to do. But it was a struggle to nail down places and so forth, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's one of the challenges of running a river that not very many people run, you know, that was one of the biggest challenges, yes.
Yeah, I was thinking that earlier, too. I guess you can probably get pretty good now with satellite maps and all, but where you would know that you'd want to get off the water and camp and make sure you hit those spots as you're drifting down the river, so you got there in a timely manner that you could set up camp and not be in the middle of the night.
Yep, exactly.
All right, well, it seems like that's good. Well, in the beginning of that, you talked about, and this is kind of a segue, that you had planned the trip with some of the people you had done your guiding, your schooling, your camp with, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that I do.
Tell us about your.
Sure. What I try to do is I try to, you know, Kayak 58 LLC, and what I do is I try to educate kayak anglers, not only in the kayaking aspects, because I'm also an ACA certified kayak instructor, but I'm also interested in helping guys learn how to target and pattern fish. I know there's at least one person in the chat room right now that was at my boot camp. And I talk a lot at the boot camp during the seminar piece the first day of how to pattern fish, how to make decisions about where fish are on any particular day, and then, of course, trying to fine-tune a presentation that's going to optimize, you know, your catch, increase the size of your catch, and so forth. And so I try to take kind of a systematic approach during my boot camps and during my class. Of course, I can accomplish more during a boot camp than I can in a class. You know, the class is learning on the water as you go. You know, I might stop and explain some things, but we're pretty much, you know, we're getting to a spot on the river. This is a ledge. You know, this is how I break down a ledge. This is how I'm going to fish a ledge. This is the bits I use when fishing a ledge, given certain circumstances. You know, this is a bridge piling. This is how I approach a bridge piling. You know, these are the times of years when bridge pilings are good to fish off of or fish on. And this is how you position your kayak. So I do a lot of that in the one-day class, which is great because it gets guys, you know, kind of increases – it kind of helps with the learning curve a lot. And I try to feed them as much information as I know about patterning smallmouth and the presentations that I use to catch smallmouth, you know, day in and day out. So that's part of it. Now, the boot camp, you know, is a three-day experience. It's one day of seminars, and it's really a chalk talk. That's what I call it. It's a chalk talk. I get a whiteboard out. I you know, have examples of all the baits, and I go through about six or seven topics. You can actually see the topics that I cover in my seminars at the boot camp if you go to my website. So the first day I'm covering certain topics. What I find is when I do that, people have time to absorb it. They come and they take notes, you know, and they absorb it. And then what we do is we kind of implement that stuff on the river for the next 2 days. So we have a classroom setting. I fill their heads full of stuff. We head out on the river the next morning. We do a day on the river, do some paddling right away. And, you know, the first thing we do is learn a good paddling technique and some different, you know, positioning techniques for kayak when you're fishing. And then we try to implement all the things that we're doing. Is the one folks, you know, one of the guys that was in my class, I'll literally, you know, we'll be throwing a lot of baits early on. You know, there'll be four guys in the boot camp, and you know, we throwing a lot of baits, and then I bring them in. And I say, what happened? You know. Did you catch a fish? Did you get a bite? How deep was that fish? What kind of substrate? You know, what was the current like? How is it relating to the current breaks? And so we literally then can break it all down, and I kind of relate it back to the stuff we talked about, patterning the fish, you know, on the first day. So the boot camp is a great, you know, format, and it's a lot of fun too. Yeah, on the walk for 3 days with guys who are really enthusiastic about kayak fishing. But it's a really great format for learning and really getting into the sport of kayak fishing and kind of upping your game a little bit too.
Gotcha. I'm going to backtrack here because we've had a lot. Sure. Once you said boot camp and all that, a lot of ears kind of perked up. Some people said they need to take it. One of our people in the chat room is apparently attending one of your classes on the 28th. But somebody else asked, how much is the boot camp? So I guess just kind of give us a rundown. What's how much is the boot camp and
yeah,
kind of what's
the boot
included.
Camp? Yeah, the boot camp prices are on my website there, and it, you know, and that's, I only do that once a year, and I do it for a week, and I do two sessions, a first session and a second session. I usually do it in June. So that camp this year was $500 a person, and that included basically all your food when you're there, and you know, and that, and all the instruction. And the overnight accommodations that they ground in a rustic cabin that I rent for the guys to stay in. So it's kind of like a boot camp, right? You know, you're in the bunks, and you know, you get up early in the morning and you go out and hit the river. And I do make them swim like 3 miles. That's like the final. They have to swim 3 miles with their kayak on their back. That's a joke.
Okay. I got you. Yeah, I got you. Well, I'm listening to you, but at the same time, I'm trying to keep up with this chat room because I can't tell which part of the chat room is this picking on each other, or and then there's questions for you. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, we're also planning a weekend fishing trip on our own chat room. So we got all kind of things going on at the same time here.
Oh,
but anyway, all that information. What?
They're looking at the chat room and say, what is going on?
Yeah, I know. I'm like making sure that nobody misses a question for Juan, because that's really what everybody's here for. And then the weasels in the show are trying to pick their Sunday fishing trip on what's going on. Anyway, see, we all do fish. So all that information can be found on your website, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely. I've got detailed information about the boot camp.
Looks like Andy Jade from the Milk Crate, which I know everybody here is familiar with the Milk Crate. He's already, I think, getting his – he's over there now ready to – take a plane trip to Pennsylvania, I think, and get some of your classes in. So that's very cool. Well,
be glad to have
them,
that's for sure.
What are you teaching now? So this time of the year, it's summertime, it's hot, it's water's clear. What's going on now? What's the hot topic in school?
This past Friday and Saturday, I just did a custom 2-day class for a group of guys from Maryland, and they came in and they wanted to fish the Juniata River and the Susquehanna River. So one day we did the Juniata River, which fishes a lot different than the Susquehanna River. The Juniata River has different structure in the river and so forth, so it's definitely a different approach there. And then when you flip over to the Susquehanna, you know, the ledge in the Susquehanna is where it's at, and knowing how to break down the ledges and find the fish in the ledges is really important. So we spent a lot of time, though, going over finesse presentations for smallmouth bass, because really this time of year, you know, for the most part, the rivers are low and clear. And in those situations, you really have to have kind of a different approach to finding fish you know, finding out what they want and, you know, in approaching those fish, especially if you're looking for big fish. I mean, the first thing that we really talked about was stealth. You know, we're really going into water now, especially on the Susquehanna, that those jet boats cannot even access. I mean, we were on the Susquehanna on Saturday, and we did not see one other boat, not one other jet boat out there because, quite frankly, they can't get where we were. But the big fish are there. So what we were looking for is vast areas of water in the rocks and boulders that had some access to deep water. So those were your absolute best spots. If you had a nice shallow feeding area and you had access to some deep water and some boulders, maybe some faster water, that's where we were getting the best fish. Now, you know, as far as that clear water, you know, your stealth is important. You really have to take your time. You really have to make long casts. I can't impress that enough on folks. The biggest problem that I see with guys that I'm teaching to finesse fish is that their casts are just too short. They're not getting their bait out there to the fish. You know, their kayak is just too close to where they're going to fish. And so basically what I typically do is talk to guys about their rod and line choice, because that has a lot to do with, you know, whether they can, you know, toss the baits. So my bait selection for finesse fishing for this past weekend really was a 3-inch stick worm. It was a creek darter, which is like a fluke, you know, a soft jerk bait, which is a small 3.25-inch, and then a small 3.25 crayfish pattern. So I've got bait fish stuff, I've got, you know, crawfish stuff, and it's all very light and very hard to throw. And so what I typically will do is I'll use a 7.5-foot rod, medium light, and I use braid, 620 braid, and a 10-pound fluorocarbon leader. And that setup really launches those kind of baits a country mile. And, you know, that's really an important part of it. Again, a lot of guys will struggle in low clear water because they can't get their baits out in front of their kayak far enough. They can't make those longer casts. So having the right equipment is really, really important. And of course, that's spinning gear that we're using. The bait selection for low clear water that I covered, it was really, you know, like you said earlier, matching the hatch. And so you really have to pay attention to the crayfish that are in the water. You know, on the Susquehanna, the crayfish tend to have a blue tint. They have a special crawfish, Susquehanna crawfish color from Winko's that I use, and it's got a blue tint in it. So in that clear water, I mean, you put that thing in the water, and it looks exactly like one of those other crawfish that are there. And then, you know, the creek darter, typically, you know, a natural color, something lighter, silver color, maybe a black back. And then the 3-inch stick worm, I go with like the minnow forage, which has like a green brown color to it. So those are my color selections for the low clear water. And you know, as far as, you know, finding the fish, you know, I think that one of the things we pay a lot of attention to, and we did on Saturday in particular, is cloud cover versus sun. When you have cloud cover, the fish will roam more. And they're actually harder to nail down where they're at, so you're not targeting your cast. At one point, we were basically fan casting in about 3 foot of water in these like shallow feeding areas where we knew the fish were chasing crayfish and minnow baits, and just kind of fan casting our baits out across there, trying to, you know, pick up one of those fish that's kind of cruising around and feeding. Now, when the sun came out, the game changed a lot. So if the sun came out for about a half an hour to an hour, the fish started to suck into the ledges, right? They started to suck right into the boulders, into that shade. And so then your whole strategy changed. You had to look out across the water, you know, with a good pair of sunglasses, find the boulders, you know, find the deeper water, you know, the differences in color, and you know the water's a little bit deeper. Find the backside of the ledges, you know, look at the direction of the sun, find out where the shade's going to be, and that's where you're presenting your lure. And again, it, you know, it's kind of paying attention to the sun. At one point when the cloud cover came in, the fish were roaming so freely, we were throwing spinner baits in you know, 2 feet of water, 1-2 feet of water, and catching smallmouth because they were just out there roaming around and feeding on bait fish. So just kind of paying attention to your light, I think, is important during summer in low clear conditions. Presentations we use in low clear conditions, really, for big fish, you need to let bait sit. You need to have a slower presentation. Now, that being said, I'll fish as fast as I can get away with. You know, it's
hey,
you know,
right.
Yeah, I want to cover water. You know, so it's a, you know, I'll give you an example. At one point, we're throwing, you know, crawfish and letting them set and catching fish. When we had a period of cloud cover, the fish were roaming more. That's when we switched over to spinner baits, and guess what? We started fishing faster. We were fishing the same water, so we're fishing the top of pools, the bottom of pools, because that's where the fish were. That's where we concentrated most of our efforts. The middle pools were not doing well. The middle trenches were not doing well. Top of trenches, ledge trenches were doing well. Bottom of ledge trenches were doing well. Rock gardens with water flow were doing well. So when we had a lot of cloud cover, instead of fishing slow, we fished fast. Because I'd rather fish fast. I'll fish as fast as I can get away with. If I have to fish slow, I will. I'll do it. But you know, it's better to fish fast and get the biters, you know.
Very cool.
Any questions coming in there?
Somebody asked about the drought conditions and how you, I guess, basically how it's affecting the fishing and how you're handling it. So are you in a drought condition up there on the river?
We are really low. I mean, the Susquehanna gauge was down to like 3.2, and that's about as low as it gets. Honestly, in these conditions, I like them because I feel like it concentrates fish. So when the water's really low, it's going to concentrate fish. And so, you know, if I'm looking for big fish, if I can find an area on the river where I've got access to deep water, like 4, 5, 6 feet of water at least with some boulders, and I've got, you know, a shallow feeding area for that fish nearby, and it can swim freely between those two areas, I know that I'm going to have a big fish spot. You know, I mean, and you don't know it, but you're pretty certain
right.
It's going to be a big fish spot. So the fish aren't as spread out all over the place. It concentrates fish. I think easier to determine where the big fish might be. That held true this weekend. I mean, we caught, I think the big fish was 19 and a half on Saturday. And then the day before we caught, I think 4 fish over 18 on the Juniata River, which is pretty good for that river. Plus a bunch of other fish that were nice sized. So I think low water helps, but you have to be stealthy. You have to watch your noise in the kayak. You know, there's sound deadening, you know, stuff you can put on your kayak. That's good to do. Watch what you're doing with your paddle. Lay it in your lap. Don't let it hit the side of your kayak. When you paddle, don't take an all-out paddle stroke to get into spots. When you're moving in on a pool or a push water that you think is going to be good, you know, slow your paddling down. You know, just, you know, I teach guys not to arm paddle, but when you're trying to move in quietly on a spot, you're using your arms. You know, you're just kind of slowly paddling and not making any disturbance. You let yourself glide into position, or you use some rock to wedge yourself quietly to hold position so you're not moving in on those fish and you can make the long cast. So stealth is really important, and that's where I see a lot of guys blowing it in low water, and that's, I think, why they get frustrated at times. And having the right finesse presentation, too, I think is important.
Very cool. Back to your distance casting, someone asked,
yeah.
Is it 30-foot cast or – what's the, is it really a number or just a distance from where you are to your actual, you're basically saying that you don't need to get right on top of the area you want to fish. You
want
to be.
Yeah, you don't want, you
want
to be off. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. That's hard to determine. I don't know the number of feet. If I can't see the fish, then I feel like I'm okay. You know what I mean? If I can't see the bottom of the river and it's low and clear and I'm casting to a spot, I think that's okay. You know what I mean? If I can see the fish, it can see me, and that's kind of the marker that I use, you know. And that's tough because when you're looking for boulders, things like that, you're moving in on them and you see them, but that also means the fish might see you too. So I don't know. I try to make the longest possible cast I can. I wouldn't put a mark on it, but, you know, twice your kayak length, you know, of a 13-foot kayak, that's not good enough. You know what I mean? You got to really be able to air it out.
Yeah, and I cover that in seminars too. Distance, I mean, it's
yeah.
a lot. I mean, it's a lot. Yeah. I'm sure for you and your clear rivers, it's a lot for us in the salt and
yeah.
the flats, and when that
yeah.
water is clear and skinny, that you know, the more distance. Plus, the more
right.
distance you can cover, is mm-hmm. that much more distance you're fishing. So, you know, you got that. You're covering more water. The more time your lure's in the water, the more chances are you have of getting hit. So, definitely covering distance is. It plays a part no matter where you're fishing.
Right.
Somebody else wanted to know.
Right. One little trick there before we move on. One little trick that you can do in low clear water to find those boulders that are down there, and you know, in the moving water, you have an advantage, but you can feed the water. So when I'm looking downriver or I'm looking across the river for a spot to cast ahead of me, there are a couple things I look for without being able to see the boulders that are down there, or ledge rock that's down there. I look for still bubbles. So if I see a lot of bubbles moving downriver, but I see a patch of still bubbles on top of the river, that's a patch that's still water, and there's probably a ledge, a boulder, or a old spare tire down there. I don't know what it is, but there's something breaking the water there, you know, breaking the current. The other thing I do is use those, you know, like the nervous-looking water, like the dimple on the water when it rolls over a boulder. When you see that dimple, you know, usually the dimple is slightly downriver from the actual object, so you have to remember that, but that's another visual cue that you can have in the river without actually seeing what's down there. And I use those a lot. I use those visual cues a lot when I fish in rivers, not only in low clear water, but a lot of times, you know, even in high muddy water, I'm looking for those still patches of water, and I can't see what's down there. I can just see what's on top, happening on top of the river, on top of the water. So that's a trick. If you're trying to make long casts and you don't, you know, you can't see what's down there, you know, look for those still bubbles. Look for that, you know, that ripply water on top, the kind of water, nervous water that's folding. That means there's something down there, and it's worth making a cast to it.
Very cool. Okay, I got two here I got to remember. So I'm trying to I'm taking notes on my own show so I can make sure I get everybody's question in. So a while ago, someone wanted to know, Sean wanted to know, did you get a chance to do any fly fishing back to that Devil's Run trip that you took?
Nobody brought a fly rod. No, nobody brought a fly rod. So no fly fishing, unfortunately.
Okay. And now the next question popping up, and now it's getting a little bit of a debate here. They want to know, are you using mono? Have you made the switch to a braided line?
I use braid on all of my spinning outfits for most of my fishing. Anything that I'm dragging a bait, I'm finessing a bait, I'm using braid with a fluorocarbon leader. The length of the leader depends on the bait that I'm using. If I'm using a 3-inch stick worm and I'm trying to cast in 4 foot of water, I'm going to use about a 7-foot leader because I don't want it to hit that braid, which floats and pendulum down and lose its kind of natural drift or drop. And when I'm using bottom bouncing baits, I'm only using about a 3-foot of a leader for those kind of baits, you know, like tubes and crawfish baits with lead on them. And then, you know, the only thing I'm using mono with now is my spinnerbait rods. I use those mono on my spinnerbait rods religiously. I like to stretch when it comes to fishing spinnerbaits, and that's one of the things that I really pride myself on is my ability to spinnerbait fish. I feel like that stretch gives the fish a chance not to suck it in like some guys, you know, believe. I think the fish is going to put that thing in its mouth anyway, whether you board tight or got mono. What I like about it is, if you watch the fish in low clear water hit your spinnerbait, when you have mono, it stretches, and that stuff stretches a country mile. But the cool thing about it is, when you have a fish that hits your bait, it can turn with it. When it turns, I get a better hook set. So if that bait hits, or that fish hits the bait, and it can turn its head away from me and stretch that line, that's okay with me, you know, and then I'm going to hit it, you know, hard. I usually use, instead of a hard, sharp, you know, hook set, I use a big sweeping hook set and reel at the same time. I think that initial shock of the hook hitting the fish, like I've done some reading on it, the initial shock of the hook hitting the fish is only one part that drives, you know, one part of the equation that will drive that hook through the fish. You need that constant pressure right after the hook set to drive it clear through. And actually, I brought that point home during my class. Some of the guys were having problems with their hook set and the baits were getting thrown, and I kind of showed them what I was doing, and then I showed them every fish that I caught had the hook completely through the mouth, in the part of the mouth. Because when I hit the fish, I not only hit it, but I reel and I sweep and I put a lot of pressure, after pressure, on that fish to drive that hook clear through its mouth. And then you don't get that, you know, the fish jumps and it throws your bait kind of thing. I mean, you're still going to get that, but that's just one of the things, little things that I do, one of the little things I teach during my class.
Really cool. Okay, so your mono, and I'm trying to equate things to like my saltwater world here.
Yeah.
You know, we got to beef up our leader material or whatever because of oyster bars and structure.
Yeah.
So it's got to be the same for you on the river with the rocks and the trees and all that stuff. So what's like your average mono setup? What pound test are you using?
I'm only using 10 to 12.
Really?
On all my spinnerbait setups, yeah. What I do though, because all the ledge rock and so forth, what tends to happen is your hook or your knot where you tie on to the R bend of the spinnerbait, it tends to get mashed down because it hits rock a lot, and that first foot line is frayed a little bit. So what I do after I've caught a couple fish, 2-3 fish, I always check I recheck my knot, recheck my line, and retie it. Because the biggest problem is, and I've done this where, you know, I just forget what I'm doing, I'm fishing, and you're banging that spinner bait off of stuff down there, the rock and so forth, and all of a sudden your hook's mashed down, and you go to set the hook, you know, and basically you set the hook and you break your spinner bait off. So I'm really careful now to make sure I'm checking the knots, checking the line, retying, because those knots will get mashed down on a spinner bait.
Okay. Cool. Now, I would have thought it would have been a little higher than what you just said, 10 to 12 pound mono. That's interesting.
No, it's pretty good. It does the job.
Yeah, we keep about 15 to 20 here, and I like you, though. I keep checking it after several casts around the oyster bars or whatever, because there's nothing more disappointing than to snap off a fish because you didn't check your leader and you see where it broke right when you're fighting a fish or whatever. And you can hear me screaming country mile when that happens.
Yeah, it's a heartbreaker. Yeah, definitely. And that happens to guys that are new to river fishing, especially in the Susquehanna with the rock. I had a guy, you know, one of the guys in the class this weekend, and he had on a monster. I mean, it just when you get that like big head shake and it's like slow motion, you can see the rod throbbing. You know, it's a big one. It's not like that quick bam, bam, bam. I mean, that guy had on a horse. And you know, he broke his leader, and what we determined is where it broke, it probably had abraded on the ledge rock at some point in time, you know, while he's fishing, and he just never checked it to retie it.
Gotcha. We're going back to – oh, does Juan ever get pike or muskie when bass fishing?
Every once in a while we get a muskie. I don't really target – and we get walleye too. But I don't target those fish. I see them a lot on the Juniata River and the Susquehanna River, but it's not one of my specialties. I mean, I've caught them in the past. I've fished for them. I grew up in Pennsylvania, so I've caught about every possible fish there is to catch in Pennsylvania. But it's not something I target, but certainly from time to time, you know, we'll latch into one, especially when we're spinnerbait fishing. That's usually when we're going to get a muskie or a pike.
Cool. I was listening to a podcast today on a guy talking about the muskie fishing and what are they, the 10,000 cast fish or whatever.
Oh yeah, they're definitely hard to catch. The guys that are good at it though, man, they do a number on them. The guys that really know what they're doing, they can get after them.
That's what he was saying. He said it's not as hard as people think it is. They just kind of, and he was going through. I was listening. It's kind of interesting because he was talking about a lot of the baits that he was talking about and the things they use. I mean, it'd be almost impossible for us kayak fishermen. He's talking about 1 and 2 pound rigs that are like 24 inches long. Sound like trolling rigs for offshore fishing or something. But
yeah,
and then that figure eight thing.
Yeah, I was talking about clear water fishing. I did a seminar at Blue Mountain Outfitters, and I'm going to put the link to it now. And if you guys want to take a look at it, I actually cover some presentations on some of the baits that I mentioned tonight. So I just threw that up there if guys want to take a look at it.
Okay, got the link up there. Hope everybody's been following the links for everything Juan's been putting up, but I'm sure that they can just go ahead because we have a lot of people who podcast the show or who are listening live on the phone who aren't looking at the chat room. So how does someone get in touch with you? What's the best way, your website?
The best way to get in touch with me is just go to my website, kayakfishpa.com. And you can either send me an email on there. I have a form you can fill out. You can call me. I don't mind people calling me. Yeah, that's the best way to get in touch with me. You know, so if you have a question about my classes, you know, and I do custom classes too, like that group that came in from Maryland. You know, they wanted a boot camp like experience. You know, although they didn't want, you know, not to camp and stuff like that. So you know, to get a custom class for 2 days and went out and you know, learned some things and caught some fish. Two of the guys had never kayaked before, and it was nice to see that, you know, they caught some really nice fish. So it was good to see that.
Very cool. When's your next class?
The next time I'm going to teach is actually not this weekend, but the weekend after. I've got two classes. One of the guys in the chat room, I think, is signed up for the class.
Yeah, he had a 28th.
So I'm teaching on the 28th and 29th. And I think I'm pretty much booked through till August for my classes. And I have my September and October classes posted out there. I teach one class a month on the Susquehanna River, and I teach one class a month on the Juniata River. And then, again, I can do custom stuff, you know, and I have certain, you know, limitations and so forth. But all that stuff's on my website, kayakfishpa.com.
You're going to play along with me now, because I know I'll get in trouble if I don't do this once, and I'm almost ashamed to do it because I'm a die-true Hokie fan, but Tommy V would not be happy if I didn't say we are.
Is he getting on your case about that, huh?
Penn State. That's all he was talking about. We fished with him the other day. He's like, you're damn right I'm tuning in. We are Penn State. He was just going on and on about, well, it's Penn State, you know. So
yeah,
I had to make sure that I threw up. His
daughter's a student there. She's doing great things.
Okay, yeah,
there you go, Penn State. See, I just wanted to make Tommy V happy and make sure I mentioned that on the show tonight, because that's one thing he did. Tom's daughter and Tom's money are both going to Penn State.
We got any more questions, or are we out of time here?
We're good on time. We got a few more minutes left. If you're good to still go, we got one here.
Questions.
Is Ron still filming videos with Jeff Little? Yeah, somebody wants to know if you're still doing stuff with Jeff.
Yeah, we're still fishing and so forth. Now, he's been doing a lot of tidal stuff, so he hasn't been up this way. He was up this way last weekend, but I was, of course, teaching. So, you know, it was tough to connect with them, but I'm sure we'll be doing more fishing and more, you know, videos in the future. We have I can't tell you how much fun we have when we do that stuff. I mean, it's just tons of fun, and we go out there, have fun, we catch fish, we talk about what we're doing, you know, to the camera. I think we're both getting kind of comfortable with that format, and it's just a lot of fun to be able to package that in a video and put it out there on YouTube and have people take advantage of it right away and hopefully help guys, you know, learn a little bit more about the sport and, you know, get interested in it, you know. It's a lot of fun. We do a lot of wintertime fishing, which is, you know, most guys don't do. So we'll be out there paddling with the ice, you know, ice cubes and stuff. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say, yeah, I've seen you and Jeff's pictures up there with the snow hanging on the trees right above your head, and it looks like the bass has got snow on his head when you're holding him out of the water.
We
do the same here for Striper.
Yeah, we filmed one February, and I will tell you that we caught 3 19-inch smallmouth, like 19-plus smallmouth, in about 30 minutes, and it was, you know, there was a snowstorm. It snowed so hard we couldn't even see the other side of the river. I mean, that's how heavy the snowstorm was. And that's always a great backdrop. I mean, we've got that on video too. So if he you know, decides to put out a winter fishing video, that's definitely going to make the cut. That was just a ton of fun that day. A ton of fun.
All right, here's a question I have, because I don't do any of this bass and all, but a couple of weeks ago I listened to Bob Clouser, and he was talking about the condition of the Susquehanna. Jeff talked about it a lot last week. Well, not a lot, but Jeff mentioned it last week. Now, the stretches in the areas, is that your area also? Is the Susquehanna in the back shape where you are too?
Yeah, some of it is. Now, part of the Juniata River, the lower section of the Juniata River, is affected as well. So it's pretty much the same as the Susquehanna River in terms of the fish kills and so forth. But I can guide the entire length of the Juniata River. I mean, there's probably not a boulder I don't know on that river. And so, you know, I move my classes up into the upper Juniata when they close the rivers down in spring, you know. But definitely, you know, as Jeff alluded to, there's definitely a water quality issue. What the solution is, you know, who's going to find the, you know, is there one thing, is there two things, is there 10 things? It's really a hot topic right now. So, you know, all I can say, there's definitely a problem. There's definitely a water quality issue. What that is, hopefully the biologists and scientists can do enough work there to figure it all out and then address the problems directly. You know, closing down the river is one thing that they did, but, you know, that's a band-aid, you know, until they find the real problem and can implement real solutions to the problem.
I got you. We're going to do, I don't know if you're, do you know who Bo Beasley is, Juan? Are you familiar with Bo Beasley?
No, huh? No.
All right. Well, Bo's, he's written two fly fishing books, and this is kind of off topic, but really it's on topic, and I'm kind of putting it out there for listeners, and I think it'd be something you guys would be interested in too, is Bo's going to be on in a couple of weeks because we got a situation here on the river.
On the 7th. He'll be on
yeah.
the 7th.
The Jackson, Jackson River, where a kayak angler was drifting down the river and was arrested because he went through private water area. And so it's been a big fight. It's been a big legislation thing and a whole bunch of stuff's going on. But it's not just pertaining to Virginia. I mean, it's happening all over the country. It's happening offshore
when
they're trying to close fisheries. And I'm sure for a lot of, you know, our listeners tonight who kayak, you know, bass, river fish and things like that, it's going to be very interesting. And I'm going to start putting up some links to some of the articles and some of the things that have happened to this gentleman who's been arrested and Bo's kind of fight, if you will, with the, what do you call it, the legislation and all that. Because it's funny because nobody really has the, you know, the answer to it all, but everybody's got a finger to point at somebody about the case. And this thing
they,
that you
they
got
had,
tonight.
Yeah, they had a similar situation here in Pennsylvania. The landowner actually ended up losing because it was because the water was deemed navigable. So there's there's a case in Pennsylvania. You could probably Google it and see the results of it. Sounds very similar.
Yeah, and this guy, I mean, you know, he was floating down the river. I mean, he wasn't on the guy's land. He wasn't on it. He was floating down the river, and he goes arrested. I mean, literally arrested.
Wow.
So, it's going to be pretty interesting, but I was just, like I said, just want to throw that out there because, you know, with all you guys that drift these rivers and everything with the kayaks and how easily a nice day drifting down the river turned crappy for one individual. So I think it's something that we all need to be aware of out there because there's not too many people standing up for the little guy, so to speak, when it comes to that stuff. But
that would be a new experience, though, a getaway in a kayak, you know? What happens if the guy just would have paddled away? A getaway in a kayak.
Well, I guess they blocked them off down below. Yeah, I'm not sure of all the story, and Bo will fill us in, hopefully, on the whole particulars of it. I've read about it, but I don't know. But anyway, I just wanted to kind of throw that out there because I think it's pretty interesting. And like I said, I'm going to start putting up links as the show gets closer just to let people kind of read what's going on and get the gist of our guest and what's going to happen that week. So it's all right. So I got a couple more questions for you, then we are going to have to wrap it up. We're getting close now.
Sure.
So Chris wants me to ask you. I don't know why she doesn't. Chris, you can ask him.
No, I sent you the private message. You go ask her.
Oh, see. Anyway, she wants to know what's in your crate. But I thought that wasn't going to be her question. Our usual question. Yeah, go ahead and answer that one. What's in your crate?
What's in my crate? Probably about 80 pounds of crap. whatever. Put it this way. Whatever I can fit. And I think there's stuff hanging out the holes in my crate, too. So what's in there? I don't know. Some 360 Plano boxes full of crankbaits, spinnerbaits. I got a spinnerbait box, three boxes of crankbaits, hard jerk baits, top water lures. I've got about, I don't know, 10 1-gallon Ziploc bags full of different types of baits, soft baits. I've got
more stuff than you need, right?
I got my sunglasses, my sunscreen, my leader material. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for lunch. And then on the top, I didn't get to the top part of my crate. The top part of my crate, I got like a special compartment where I put all the stuff I think I'm going to use that day, but I use half of them, okay?
That's right.
And then attached to my crate, of course, you got the rod holders because, you know, every good, you know, self-respecting kayak angler has to have at least a minimum of 6 rods on board ready to go at all times. You know, I'm not sure why.
You and Chris will get along great.
And
I'm gonna get along great.
I'm about ready to drill more holes in my kayak. I need like 10 rods right now. That's what I'm thinking. Like 10 might be the optimal number. 6 is okay, but I'm thinking 10 is going to be the optimal number.
See, Mark,
I might be able to stop at 10.
Mark frowns at me when I take 3. I really want to take 4, but then I look at him and he gives me that dirty look, and it's like, you're taking the kitchen sink again. It's like, okay, I'll make.
It's not how many rods. No, I take 3 also, Juan, but the thing is I love her to death, but she fishes all three at the same time. So she'll have a bottom rig in, she'll have something under a popping cork, and then she'll be casting, and then she'll get hooked up on one fish, and then all three of those rods become one. You know what I mean? So then it's like, and then I'm over in my little world fishing, and I always get that, Mark, you know what that call is, because she's got
you know,
three rods
that
are now.
That, look,
yeah.
My
yeah,
response
so
be, looks
like
we're going to have to cut your line.
Oh, we brought out the snips a few times. Yeah, we cut it all off and retied.
Well,
but
oh, hey, but at the end, I get the fish. I'm just trying to maximize my opportunities.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, that's a good point, though. I mean, even in the river, you want multiple rods because you're going to, you know, when you're floating down the river, you don't want to take time to retie. So, you know, I'm going to have
right.
a spinner bait on for certain types of water that I float, go through. Deeper water, I'm going to need something that's going to drag the bottom and get down 8-10 feet of water. And then when I hit that shallow water, I might want to, you know, weightless soft plastic that's not going to get snagged up in the, you know, 1-2-3 foot of water. Maybe
that's
a shallow
what I always
running crankbait.
You got to have a top water, a middle column, and a bottom
yep.
thing. Got to have all
right,
three.
Exactly.
Get the whole water
exactly.
columns going, and then you can adjust as you go on through your day.
Exactly.
All right, I'm going to ask you one more question, and then we're going to go because
sure.
we're running out of time. What's on your bucket list for fish? What's the fish that Juan hasn't caught and wants to target?
The fish that
Salt,
Juan hasn't
fresh,
caught.
Doesn't matter.
I got to be honest with you. You know, I have to hook into one of those snakeheads. You know, I've caught a lot of fish in Pennsylvania. I don't really have a desire to catch any like exotic fish, but the snakehead and what I saw in the video, I think that would be a ton of fun. You know, it looked like a muskie. It looked like how a muskie fights, but I think it's got a little bit more power. I'd like to hook into one of those. Nothing fancy, you know.
Very
and
cool.
maybe a state
cool.
record smallmouth, you know.
Oh, yeah.
While I'm wishing, I might as well wish for that, you know?
Right on. Well, we really appreciate you giving up your Tuesday evening for us. You're always welcome on the show. If you got anything going on you want to share with our listeners in the future, feel free to call in or put it up in the chat room. You're always welcome here. So
sure.
We definitely want you to come down for the boondoggle, too. Let's get you on some salt water. We got freshwater fish here.
Boondoggle. What the heck is a boondoggle? It's a bunch of crazy kayakers getting together in Virginia Beach, October 5th through 8th. For more information, check out yakangler.com, the ultimate resource for kayak fishermen.
There you have it.
Yeah, I just found out
yeah,
I'm not going to be able to make the boondoggle. I'm going to be in Tennessee. I'm going to be in Tennessee that week.
All right. Well, we'll get you down here sometime. You're welcome to come down here. We'll put you on some fish, do whatever. We'd love to have you down in the salt water. Bring Toast with you. He knows the neighborhood.
Gotcha. Yeah, I haven't been in salt water for a long time. I used to surf a lot, but I've never kayak fished in the surf, so I'd give that a
come
shot. Maybe. Looks a little dangerous
right,
on the waves of kayak.
No, well, we'll go in the flats and we got plenty of places. I don't mess around with the big rough surf either. I'm getting too old for that crap too, so not for me.
I hear you.
Well, thanks again, Juan.
All
we
right,
really
man.
Appreciate it.
No
anybody,
problem.
Make sure you check out Juan's website. Give your website one more time, Juan, before you take off.
Kayakfishpa.com.
There you go. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. All right. Well, with that being said, it's time for us to wrap it up. We've almost filled our hour and a half obligation here, so I just like to thank everybody, as always, for tuning in. You guys are what makes this show happen and what keeps Chris and I coming back. Good fans, good listeners like you guys really keep it interesting. We appreciate you tuning in. Everyone who's podcasted the show, thank you for downloading it. Don't forget to mark your calendars for the PKA tournament and also for the boondoggle. Everybody go check out the new Native, go over to the Native Watercraft site and see what they're teasing everybody with for the new boat coming out. I'm pretty stoked about it. Chris and I had a chance to paddle the prototype a couple different times as it was being developed, and it's going to be a pretty sweet boat. So we're looking forward to that coming out. So go check out Native Watercraft on their Facebook page. I mentioned at the top of the show, if you're not friends with Chris or myself, and our First Landing Kayak Fishing page, go check us out. Give us a like. Anything we can ever help you with, be sure to let us know. We'll be glad to give you any information we can, especially regarding the upcoming boondoggle. that's about all I got. Time to go do my fishing buddy hangout with the gang. So you guys take care. Plan your fish. Fish your plan. Chris, get us out of here.
Hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. It's hot out there, people. Remember, take your children fishing. They're our next generation anglers. Tight lines, everybody, no matter where you're fishing.